Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is iFanboy Media Explode, episode 32, What We Watched Over the Holidays.
Almost cut my hair. Happened just the other day. It's getting kind of long.
Hello, welcome to iFanboy Media Explode. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Hello.
And Ron Richards.
Happy New Year, my friends.
And we're back. We're back after taking a long Media Explode break. We took our last regular show was in November. Then we had our all-media show in December. Now we're back with our monthly Media Explode that was unlocked by the patrons at patreon.com/ifanboy. Consider being a patron today. And so we thought we'd do is we, you know, since normally we use this show to talk about things we've been watching and enjoying, and we normally how we start the show is going over that. We thought we would do the entire episode about what we watched.
I feel like it's been like 2 months,
right? It hasn't since November. So we've had a lot of things that we've watched in the last 2 months or so, and we figured we'd go through some of the things we watched during our quote-unquote break, and just to catch each other up with what we watched and what we've been enjoying and give some recommendations.
Has too much time passed for me to say Happy New Year? Is that what's the Larry David ruling on that?
It was last week, yes.
Okay, it was last week. Okay, yeah, it's got it. Okay.
But I always find good recommendations from you, what you guys watch, and so I'm excited to find out what you guys were up to, since we don't talk unless there's a microphone, so I don't know what you've been doing the last 2 months.
we exchanged written witticisms.
Right.
That's what we do. We do written witticisms.
Pleasantries in the hallway. We just, when we walk by, yes, we nod at each other in the office and just say, yeah.
The virtual hallway. Yeah.
But in the last contract negotiation, we stipulated no non-microphone interaction.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, I don't want to have to talk to you guys unless I have to. Jesus.
Right.
Do you want to do TV first
Let's
and then do
TV.
Some movies?
Now, why don't you start, Ron? Yeah.
Let's make it sound like we're just making it up on the spot. Let's do it. like we didn't discuss it. Say, Connor, since we're here.
I mean, we're here. Let's chat.
Why not?
I had to pop that bubble. I just couldn't live with it.
So I guess a lot of my December and early January TV watching has been just trying to get stuff off my plate. You know what I mean? Like, there's stuff that like we were like one or two episodes in that we got like that you know, for whatever reason kept us off or whatever it is. But I think out of the three of us, I'm the only one who actually watched Andor.
Yes. Josh watched one episode or two episodes.
No, I didn't finish. It turns out I didn't finish it. I went back and I'm like, I'll start with two. And I was like, oh, I only made it 20 minutes. And then I watched another 20 minutes. I still haven't finished it. Not on purpose. Like, to be like, I keep thinking I should try that. That's the most I've gotten, though. My time's different now.
What I thought was funny was that, like, so it came out and I just completely paid it no mind. And then I just slowly saw this, like, swell of positive comments coming through my various social media channels. Of everyone just like, anyone else watching Andor? This is really good. This is pretty good. Oh my God, that was great. You know, so I was like, all right, let me give it a shot. So I started watching it like, I feel like 3/4 of the show was already out already when we started watching it. And I got to say, in totality, it was very, very good. It was very well crafted. Very slow to begin. Very like, almost to the point of a detriment of the show where, Josh, I'm not surprised. Like the first didn't pull me in until like episode 3 or 4, right? Like it didn't like so much of it was like setting it up.
What's the length of the episode?
They're the Disney Plus Star Wars episode length, the 30 to 45-ish. You know, not a full hour, but not the 20-minute Marvel episode. enough of a chunk, but also like that. Because that's the thing. We were talking about this on the Hangout the other day, like when I was talking about Gossip Girl on HBO Max. These shows that are taking the full hour.
Too long.
Too long. You don't need all that time. Like the 42-minute, hour-long format for broadcast TV really was perfect in terms of the amount of story that you can tell in a drama kind of thing. I do believe that. That's why I like that the Star Wars shows come in like around 38, 40 minutes.
Well, they need room to do 45 minutes of credits for all the foreign translations.
That's true.
I will say that the freaking skip intro button on Disney Plus just skips the Star Wars heads animation, and I'd have to watch the opening credit for Andor, which was just like a slow moon rising on the logo that took forever, and I was like, oh. But the show was very, very good, and to the point where I kind of want you guys to watch it, because I feel like it's actually more of a show up your guys' alley than it is my alley in terms of the way it was written and the episode structures and the plot, and like the whole kind of felt like The Wire and Star Wars. So almost a little bit, you know.
Uh-huh. Josh, the number one thing we've gotten from
I've never watched The Wire, by the way.
I know, the number one thing we've got from the listeners is, why won't you guys watch fucking Andor? And we discussed it on the Hangout once, a patron Hangout, but a lot of the listeners aren't patrons. So Josh, do you want to talk about briefly why it hasn't caught your interest, or why? Or do you not care anymore?
Let's keep in mind that I don't remember what I said before. So you can either tell me, or I can just make up some new shit. But I mean, I don't have any real affinity for that character, which is funny because I think Diego Luna is an amazing actor.
But he's good at it. He's very good.
Basic, you know, I know he dies. I know, like, I don't feel like we're moving towards anything I care about.
You also said something about space brothels.
Oh, yeah, that was the other thing. Like, it really turned me off is in the beginning, they were talking about, like, the sex trade.
He was trying to find his sister.
Yeah, and he was checking, was he on Corellia?
I think it might have been. Or no, he was on another planet. It's a plot point in the show, the planet he was on.
But either way, so. It was like a space brothel. And I just thought, that's too far. That's not the Star Wars I want it to be.
Right. If it makes you feel any better, they never go back to that location ever in the show.
Right. But they did mention, I turned it on and I didn't make it through the first episode. And I watched it for a few minutes and I heard them mention the space brothel. And what's funny is that it confirmed, because before I thought maybe I didn't even hear that right. And then I turned it on. I was like, no, I did. I did. I heard it correctly. There's a whorehouse in Star Wars.
Well, anyway, so I don't know. It was more episodes than any other Star Wars show has been. It was like 12 or something like that. It was both, you know, Andor story, which I don't want to spoil for you guys, but like, Josh, it doesn't like end as he starts the Rogue One mission, you know what I mean? It's early enough in his, you know, kind of life or whatever it is that it does from there. And then you get the underpinning of the beginning of the rebellion. I'll just leave it at that. And we'd finish an episode, my wife would exhale like, whoa, that was good.
Can I tell you?
And you guys know her. Right,
was going to say, can I tell you the fact that you told me, all nerds, including you, who are telling me, you gotta watch, it's great. I didn't care. You said Carrie was interested in it, and I was like, oh, it might have merit. And that was literally the only thing that made me think I should watch it. I'm not even exaggerating.
So I give it a thumbs up overall. Mm-hmm. I think the hype was real. It was time well spent. Worth checking out.
So is it like a police procedural?
No, I wouldn't say that. There's actually it was enough of a season that there was actually like three story arcs that happened to Diego Luna's character. Mm-hmm. Like three distinct things happen in telling the whole overarching season of the show. It wasn't just like one thing, which is why it was somewhat compelling, is that like he met a bunch of people and they had to do this thing and then they did it. And then this thing happened and he met more people and they did this thing. And then that led to this. Like it was definitely more than just the singular focus. Like Obi-Wan was singularly focused, right?
Where do you put it in the pantheon of your favorite shows? Let's just assume Mandalorian's number one.
You're talking about Star Wars shows.
Just this, you don't have to include the Ewoks.
Please include the Ewoks.
That does one and two, right? Yeah, the Ewok Adventure. Yeah. I mean, come on. Yeah.
Does this show have Wilford Brimley in it? No.
I just said television.
What good is it then? What good is it?
You can also include the holiday special if you want to. No, but of the sort of like, is it, what do you think is the best? Because you've liked, I don't even remember what there was. So there was.
No, Bob. I mean, it's definitely, I mean, Mandalorian, I think is still the best.
Sure.
It's Boba Fett.
Boba Fett's at the bottom. I give this an edge over Obi-Wan.
That close, huh?
Ooh, yeah. I thought you guys didn't like Obi-Wan.
I didn't.
So then this is better than Obi-Wan. Then.
Right. Right, but you were like, I'll give it the edge over it. I was like, it needs more than an edge for me. I'm gonna need a solid 2-point gain.
No.
It's like, this is better than slightly burned toast. How much?
Well, I mean, it's slightly burned, Josh.
Like, it's not as burned, but it has been sitting out a while.
It's cool, at least.
So there you go. So I recommend that.
Anything else that you watched you really enjoyed over the...
Well, I mean, I thought I was first. Now, you know, we take turns. I've got more on my list, but if you, sure, you want me to drive
around Robin here, if we want.
Okay. Well, another show that we just wanted to get off our plate was Cobra Kai season 5.
Now, hold on. Before you get into that, is it off your plate as in it's like on your continue watching feed and you want to get it removed from there? What is the plate? It's a metaphorical plate.
I got to say, plate. Ron has really been leaning into this plate metaphor, and I'm not going to lie. My first joke was that explains the weight gain, but to be fair, he weighs a lot less than he has in the past. But
thank you.
Who can help it? Sorry, it's a diversion.
I did just recently adopt using an app called TV Time to keep track of TV shows that we watch and all that sort of stuff. But this was before I adopted that. It's just generally like it weighs on my soul. Yeah, it's Cobra Kai season 5 came out and we watched like the first episode like the weekend it came out and then didn't go back to it for like 3 months. I'm like, oh, we've got to go back to that.
The reason I asked is because a lot of the services make it really easy to remove things from your continue watching list, but Netflix doesn't. Yeah. Netflix makes you go to their website. Find your watch history, manually delete the show from your watch history.
So some of the platforms don't even have watch histories. Like I was on Hulu trying to find my watch history and like your watch history is your list. If you added it to your list and that's what you watch. So I'm like, yeah, but I don't use that function. Right. So I have no history on Hulu.
So like, whenever it came out, I watched the first 5 minutes of 1899, that Netflix show that was just canceled.
I also watched 5 minutes of that and I realized it wasn't the show that you told me to watch. That was 1923 right. or whatever
yeah,
it was.
So I watched.
So I was like, wait,
that's
wait a minute.
Very funny. Yeah. That is old man Josh right there.
It's the same.
He said it was a year. Well, I don't know, 1899. Fine, I'll watch this. Where's Harrison Ford?
They're both in the same family. So there is at least that.
I watched 5 minutes and I was like, this is utterly boring. I don't care anymore. And it's been sitting on my thing. I get emails from Netflix. Continue watching the show.
Oh, yeah. They really watch it.
Looked it up, had to remove it because I was sick of the emails. I removed it. 2 days later, it was back. And I was like yelling at the TV, you canceled this show. Take it off my thing. I've removed it 3 times from my list and it keeps popping back up like fucking so, Michael Myers.
Connor, what happens when you yell at the TV?
Ron, doesn't yell back yet. Not yet.
Ron, sit with this. I know I know the dead air is bad, but I want everyone
to sit with that for a moment.
Picture this over 6 foot man with a bald head. In his yelling at room. His no, he's got to get to the point where he feels the need to yell. You've got like it's not right away. It's like at one point, and it's that third time. He's got a remote in his hand, and I literally have my eyes closed. And he looks up, and he sees it there again. God damn!
Basically, what happened? Yes. I was wearing a robe, if it helps.
Yeah. Wearing a robe.
Like a bowl of popcorn goes flying. And you hear from the other room. Is that fucking show again?
I'm Archie Bunker, apparently.
That's very funny.
So anyway, Cobra Kai season 5, you. I also watched over the break, and it was just announced that season 6 will be coming into the final season, season 6.
Yep.
Thoughts on Cobra Kai?
Well, so Cobra Kai, like I said, it lingered because we just watched the first couple episodes and didn't go back for months. And I will say this about Cobra Kai season 5. If it was one of those seasons that felt like they didn't figure it out until like the writer's room, until they were like, they'd already written 6 episodes.
I'm trying to think of the first half I would like.
But. That happened. Yeah, right. Exactly. It was forgettable because it was just like whatever. But I will say it ended strong in the way that Why You Love Cobra Kai. And the immediate conversation that my wife and had after we finished the season was, how many more seasons can they do this for?
Well, I mean,
because really the show is only good when there's a rivalry and a tournament.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's basically the same story every season. That adds up. Move the pieces around. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
I liked this season a lot because I thought Chosen was awesome.
Chosen was great, but the here's the thing is that the season was listless because three quarters of it was just ambling, angry people in a room for no reason, and they didn't. Then they finally got a reason in the last in the back quarter of the episode of the season, and then it was great. Then we're like, oh, we can't, like, we finished it so quickly because we're like, oh, this is what we want.
Yeah, I mean, they're clearly building toward that big international tournament. We're moving beyond the valley now, and we're going to go international, and that's how it's going to end, I assume. But
I mean, I will say when I heard the news that season six would be the last, I was like, okay, that's a good run.
I mean, I love the show. Trust me, but also
at
a certain point, it's like. Okay, how many pieces can you move across the board? Now they're with Johnny. Yeah. Now they're against Johnny. Now they're with Kreese. Now they're against. It's like, okay, you put in every combination of people against each other, and now there's probably nothing left to do here.
It gets very repetitive, and like the kids' relationships are getting repetitive, and it just like so. And ultimately, what you want is you want like underdog. You want some sort of conflict between two groups, someone being the underdog, and then there being a competition. You know, like then to me, the strongest seasons have been the ones that had the tournaments in them. This one had good moments, at least for the first half or whatever, or the first three quarters of it, but it felt directionless up until we got that international tournament. Then you knew what Silver was. I thought Silver is great. I love that. That guy's awesome. And once they got the direction, then we're like, okay, cool. This is what we want out of it. And then the season was over.
Do you think he's had that long hair the entire time, just waiting?
He's just been waiting for this call.
I also like they brought their other guy back again from a movie I didn't see, but I feel like everyone who was in Karate Kid.
Oh yeah, no, and they brought the girl. They brought the girl back from three. Yeah, so exactly.
Anybody who was after like Cobra Kai came out and got hot, they started bringing the actors back. Do you think everyone who was in all the movies were like just waiting for the phone call to ring?
Has Will Smith's kid been on it yet?
That's not in continuity, Josh.
Yeah.
I know, but that's what you're going to have to do. That's season eight. Some fucking multiverse shit.
I enjoyed it. We really enjoyed
it. I hope that you're not planning on getting insightful commentary from me tonight.
That's fine. What did you enjoy watching, Josh?
Yeah, Josh, give us something.
The thing I would say is Slow Horses on Apple TV Plus. A long time ago, when it first came out, actually, this is going to give credence to the Netflix thing, if you let me get there. Watch the first episode of Slow Horses. Liked it well enough, wasn't super compelled, and kind of forgot about it. My wife, too. It's one of those things, like, I thought she wasn't into it, whatever. And then I saw that the second season had come out. And I thought, oh, maybe there's a reason to keep watching it. And so I went back, and after that, we plowed through them, like one a night is what it means when we plow through them, because they take quite a lot of focus. I just really enjoyed it. And like, I think somewhere in the middle of that, I said to Connor, I was like, have you watched this? Because it's the closest thing to MI5 or Spooks.
Why don't you explain the basic premise since. Of it?
British Secret Service MI5, the Slow Horses are the reject agents, and they're in this other house that they're not in the main MI5 thing called Slough House, and they're the Slow Horses. And Gary Oldman is the runner of the group, and he's, you know, super clever. He's got all these things going on, band of misfits and hijinks and stuff.
So you watched the first season, you finished the first season?
I finished the first season.
Okay.
And
I watched one and two after you told me, because I started watching the first one. I was like, oh, this is exactly what I want right now. And I blew through that, and season two was there, so I watched that too. And it's such a great spy show, but it's also a great showcase for Gary Oldman, who is playing a character who is super unglamorous. You know, he basically looks homeless.
He's got the hole in his socks, which is just a visual that works. It's the show's funny, not like
he's very
funny. It's not a satire, no, but like the show, like I noticed a couple of the writers' names, and I was like, why do I know that? And it was like, this person worked on Veep, or you know, there's like this clever writing. It's not a comedy per se,
but it's
really entertaining in that way, I guess.
But his character is one who, you know, he walks in a room, you like, who let that guy in? But he's probably the smartest guy in the room,
and he's playing it that way. You can see
he's Columbo. He's Spy Columbo. He's downplaying who he is to get everyone off guard. And he comes from the Moscow office. So he can stick a stiletto blade into your rib cage without a problem. Mm-hmm. And you don't even know what's happening. Like he's a great, great, great character. And he seems to be having a ball playing him.
I think I told you this, Connor, off air, but Ronald. So I was watching a scene, and Gary, was it Gary Coleman? Gary Oldman, which is a different show. Gary Oldman is arguing with Kristen Scott Thomas. He's being very flippant. And I just thought, you know what he sounds like? He sounds like Johnny Rotten here. You know, like if you've ever heard Johnny Rotten or John Lydon speak, like everything he just couldn't give as much of a shit about. And then a second later, I went, hey, he played Sid Vicious too.
Yeah, he did.
And I was like, the range on this guy. Winston Churchill, Sid Vicious, and this spy. Yeah, Jim Gordon, Sirius Black. Yeah, it's just a solid show. Continuing, you know, like a thing with Apple TV Plus is they don't do a lot, but, you know, the stuff they do that resonates with me has all been really, really good and solid. I can't wait to watch the second season.
Yeah, second season's good. This is based on a book. There's a couple of shows that I watched that are based on novels, and it has that kind of structure, but I really like that structure.
I'm not in a hurry to watch it because I want to enjoy it.
It just got renewed for two more seasons from Apple, so that's
great. Yeah. Wow. How much money are they shoveling Oldman's way?
I will say that I saw the preview for it, and I mentioned it to you, Josh. Josh was like, yeah, that's not a show you'll like. So
probably not, but you do like Gary Oldman, but probably not.
Yeah, I mean, it's good.
I like good show. I mean, I want, you know.
Well, let's be honest.
Yeah.
If you like a good show, but it has to have a quirky actor in a lead role.
That's not true.
Okay.
I like that when that happens. I know. Like give me Shatner and Boston Legal.
Did you just hear a little Moltisanti there? Because I did. I like that when it happens.
I'm not gonna say no.
T, you see this show?
Speaking of that, Ron, you watched White Lotus, right?
I did. We just finished season one of White Lotus literally last night. So I still have season two to watch because we couldn't watch season two without seeing season one.
Of course.
I thought it was good. I don't quite understand all the awards and the critical acclaim. Like it was very good, but it wasn't like, oh my god, this is like, it was no Twin Peaks.
Yeah, no, I had the same thought. I watched it. I watched it after it won all the Emmys, like basically like the week after the Emmy Awards. I should probably watch it because
every couple of years on the Emmys, there's like a show that pops up on the Emmys where like it wins all the awards and you've never heard of it.
Well, that's going to be the case now forever because there's 100 shows.
True, no, but I feel like that's happened. You know, there have been times, or even shows that are nominated, where like I was just like, "What is that?" You know,
I think it's a combination of it's not a genre show. You know, it's just like a straight up drama, and it came out at a time where we were all stuck inside, and it was like all these glamorous people in a beautiful location you know, being out in the world, and so I think it resonated with people in that sense too, because it was just sort of like. People call it vacation porn, especially the second season where they're in Italy. Like,
yeah.
So I think there's a combination of it didn't have dragons or elves in it.
At least for me, one of the challenges was like I kept on waiting for something to happen.
Yeah, it's not, you know, really
that nothing happened, but just like something that to tie everything together. And don't get me wrong, like it ended strongly and everything got tied together in a way, but it did it in a like, where's this going after five episodes of a six episode run kind of manner.
Yeah, it's not. You know? It's not a traditional – I mean, it's certainly not a mystery, though. They kind of couch it that way, but it's definitely not that kind of show.
They definitely mislead it. For the first episode, they make it look like it's going to be a murder mystery.
Yeah. So I'll be very curious to see the second season. I like the second season more.
I just realized that Chris from Moltisanti's in that show.
That's why I said
it. Yeah.
That's not why I said it. I just literally heard Chris. Yeah.
No, White Lotus wasn't on the list, but I figured – I know I just finished it. I pivoted. I ad-libbed.
You called an audible, as they say.
I did. So –
football.
Normally for me, I don't watch a lot of streaming during the year. So I usually watch as much as I can during the holiday break, like the 1 or 2 weeks off of work. I try to cram in as many shows as I can. And then at the end of the break, I broke my toe. And the doctor said, basically, don't do anything or go anywhere. So for the last 2 weeks, I've just been on my couch, either yelling at the TV or watching.
Or yelling at the TV.
Watching as many things as
for
I can.
So
I
watched camera.
Oh,
I watched 13 seasons of shows in the break.
What?
Holy
fuck balls.
Oh my god.
I watched Emily in Paris season 1, 2, 3. I watched Minx season 1. I watched Cobra Kai season 5. I watched Slow Horses season 1 and 2. I watched Three Pines season 1. I watched Jack Ryan season 3. I watched Letterkenny season 11. Mythic Quest season 3. Although that wasn't binging, but still. Kaleidoscope season 1 and Narcos season 1. Those are the shows I've watched since we last spoke on Media Explode, not counting just other regular TV.
Gosh. Are you really, really skinny or really, really fat?
No, it's the same. Nothing has changed. You guys heard about Kaleidoscope? Did you any talk about it? It was on Netflix. It was like all the rage for like a week. I only watched it for the most LAF reasons because my old neighbor was in it. It's a heist show starring Giancarlo Esposito that's told out of order.
Oh, I saw the preview of that.
Yeah, the episodes aren't numbered. They're colored. They're called, you know, episode blue, red, and you can watch them in any order you want.
Yeah.
As long as you start with black and end with white. You have to end with white because it wraps the story up. But otherwise, you can watch them in any order you want.
What does the watch the next episode algorithm do?
That's a good question. I didn't partake in that. I went back to the main menu. I watched them in Rojibiv order. And it turned out to be great because red was right after the heist. So I saw everything happened post heist and then going backwards to like heist planning. You'd be like, oh, that's going to not go right. Or that guy's going to die. It wasn't a great show.
I was going to say, did they pull it off?
It was interesting. I think they pulled it off because I didn't have a problem watching it out of order. I saw other people complain that they didn't enjoy it because it was out of order, but I didn't. I thought the way it was written, you could watch it in any order you wanted to. I had no problem with that, but I didn't think it was overly compelling, and I thought a lot of it was kind of cliche. But I applaud the effort of trying something new with this format in which you can choose the episodes. So why not try to play with that?
Did Giancarlo Esposito play the same character he plays in everything else, or
every show?
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I was reading this first like true lead role, and he's always good.
Yeah, because he only plays the very calm, very evil, quiet person.
He's not calm. He's not very evil. He's not like he's not.
I mean, except
he's
for bugging out. Bugging out was a whole other thing.
Do the Right Thing.
That's the name of the character in Do the Right Thing.
Oh, I applaud the effort of it. I also wanted to mention, I guess, Mythic Quest Season 3. It's a show we've all watched. Did you guys? I know Ron watched it. Josh, did you watch Season 3?
I didn't finish the season. I probably watched half of it.
Ah.
We kind of weren't enjoying it.
Here's the thing about it. I want to make sure we quickly talked about it because we all like the show, and there are definitely moments in the season that were enjoyable, that were reminders of why we liked the show, et cetera, all that sort of stuff. But I found that the further away, the first season, the show was so great because it was comedy and like the stuff that happened in the context of them working on this game.
Yeah.
And I feel like with every season, they've gotten away from the conceit of working on the game and more about the people, and it's gotten less enjoyable.
But there was no driving force to the episodes. It was like Poppy's annoying.
Yes.
They didn't have anything to do. It was just, it's constantly her like, wait, what am I doing? You know,
they fell into the trap of taking their characters and turning the dial on them. You know, like, her characteristics that were annoying weren't, if you go back to season one, they're there, but they're not as bad. Like, they dialed her up.
But there wasn't any growth either. It's just the same thing over and over again. And then Ian, he's just an advisor figure. You know, like, he didn't have a story. You know, David, is that his name? David?
I love him, though, but he just cracks me up. But
I
yes,
do
you're
too.
Right.
I
you
think he's
right.
amazing. Yeah. Like, it was all just these caricatures of people in different situations, but it didn't feel like, and I didn't finish the season and I didn't hate it, but I just was like, it's missing.
It's not like the second half is stronger, much like something else we just talked about. But yes, the second half is
Cobra
stronger.
Kai.
Yeah.
I thought season one was terrific. I've watched it twice. Season two, I give it a mulligan because of COVID. Season three, I feel like they're starting to fix it, but they didn't quite get all the way there. I'm assuming season four will be it if there is a season four.
The other challenge is that, like, and what frustrates me about it is that, like, also, like, McElhenney was, like, not in it a lot.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah.
And is it the kind of moment where, like, he's like, well, we're going to let David kind of shine because he's in it a lot. Whereas the previous season, he, like, I feel like the balances were shifted there.
Yeah.
You're right. Poppy's, like, freaking annoying. But then everyone else is just like, I'm waiting for the scenes to end. Like, I don't care about the former tester girls, and I don't care about the HR woman, and I don't care about, I mean, as much as I think he's funny, I don't care about Brad, like the coming out of prison thing. Like, just see.
That was my favorite part, was him and Joe, because she's awesome. She's really funny. I haven't gotten tired of her character yet.
The assistant? Yeah, hysterical. She's hysterical, yeah.
I mean, I think the thing is, like, the way you just spelled it out, like, it's only been three seasons. You don't have to break up the company yet.
Yeah.
Right.
There's no need for that. They don't need to open a second bar next to Cheers.
I wonder, though, if the business side is affecting now the storytelling. Because, you know, when streaming first started, it was this creative panacea. You could do whatever you wanted. But now it's like they have, maybe they'll get two seasons. Maybe they'll get three seasons. Maybe.
Right.
And so they got to start cramming in and putting all the twists and turns into that first season. Because
but that doesn't matter. It just has to be funny and compelling.
Yeah, but that's not the way they plan things, though.
Well, that, no. That said, though,
not the Marvel Universe.
It wasn't as, I think, dramatically effective as when they did it the first season. But Josh, did you get to the flashback episode?
No, I didn't.
I like that one. Okay. It was a good one.
That was a good one. It was good. It definitely added more value to Poppy and Ian's relationship. Mm-hmm. So it'd be worth revisiting that, Josh, just to see that, I think, just to see, you know, kind of give it a frame.
I didn't like quit it angrily. It's like Lindsay was like, I'm kind of not interested. And I was like, I'm not really all that driven either.
Wait, did you yell at the TV?
Yeah. Did you try yelling?
I mean, not that. When something doesn't work, that's when I yell. Like the cable's plugged in. Why is there no sound? Like, that'll get me. Not content issues so much.
Well, technically speaking, that's what I was yelling about. I deleted it from the
list. Actually, you know what
back.
I yell at the TV about? I watched the basketball, as you know, and ESPN and TNT specifically are constantly signing me out. And so I have to go get my laptop and I have to activate the whatever. So it'll come back on and the next day it'll do it again. And like, it never works the first time. Oh,
you know what that's not a problem with?
Huh?
Cable.
Well, I don't have cable. So my mother-in-law's login is working just fine so I can watch sports. From the good people at Comcast.
Any other TV shows you want to highlight?
Ron and I have both watched Fleischman Is in Trouble.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not done with the first season yet, but my wife watched it. I started to watch it, and then I was like, hey, you should – I watched the pilot, and I said to Lindsay, you should watch this. And she blitzed through it, and she kept coming back to me like, did you watch it yet? And I was like, no, I haven't. She's going to watch it. Like, she loved it, and yep. I can see why. I think it's a really interesting and well-acted show. I mean, it really – I'm like, yes, this is the same network that did The Bear. Like, I can feel that. It's not thematically the same, but that kind of really interesting programming that Connor was just suggesting does not seem to be happening on streaming services. It's on FX now.
It's on FX and HBO. They're still the two, I think, best networks.
Wonderful performances from Jesse Eisenberg, who I, in my mind, thought he's this new ingenue actor in his 20s. And I was like, nice. He's a few years younger than me. He's in his 40s. You know, like Adam Brody with a career performance as the best friend and Lizzie Kaplan, who I
adore. She's just so great. And it's the kind of thing where it's like, oh, man, you get reminded of how much you like a particular actor.
Right, but
she's doing a
role that's really not, you know, it's not a Manic Pixie Dream Girl. It's a whole different thing. The other thing that's really interesting is she narrates the show. But as the lead character, and I was like, that's fucking crazy.
Yeah. I mean, because she's a writer. And so, like, it ties into the whole story and stuff. And you haven't finished it yet. So I don't want to spoil what comes and stuff like that. But, like, Connor, this is also like one of the first mid 40s existential dread life after kids and marriage kind of shows in that hit us. As the target demo.
Yeah.
You know?
Like,
I feel like historically I've watched these shows and I'm like, oh, well, that's years ahead of me. I'm like, oh shit, these could be my friends, right? Like, this is like.
Now you got a good decade on 30 something.
Yeah, exactly. And they still seem so old when I watch it now. But,
they do.
But this was very much like it felt contemporaries to us and also felt very true and real and just really well done. And Connor, it all takes place in New York. It's all Manhattan based and like.
Really? Not Toronto, Manhattan.
Yeah. Like they really shot that. Yeah. Yeah. Really, really good. And Josh, you've got to finish it because it's a doozy.
I'm going to. This isn't one of those things that I forgot about or have left. I absolutely want to finish it.
It's a lot.
That's a lot of TV. Let's move over to movies. And I always try to go to the movies too during the break. But this past year, I think they said it was 35.
You keep saying a break. And there's no break in my life. Were you
podcasting for the last 2 months? Because that was the break.
No, but like, you know, like I wasn't doing that.
It just meant that I didn't
stay up all night reading comics. It just meant that I took care of my kids and did other shit in the house that I had to do.
Just contextually of the show, Josh.
We're on break from the show.
Connor watched 13 series. He didn't just take a break from the show.
Well, break your foot and not get to go anywhere. And you can sit on your couch all day and you're not doing anything.
If I thought that breaking my toe would give me that privilege, I would do it.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
All right. Well, so I try to go to the movies, but this past year, you know, they're still about 35% off of their normal output in terms of films in the theaters. There wasn't a lot to see, but I did manage to go to a couple of movies. Ron, do we want to start with Babylon?
Sure.
Let's start with Babylon.
Okay. And the recurring theme of almost every movie that I've seen has been, oh, God, someone needs to tell them to make less.
Yeah.
Because so Babylon is about the 1920s into the 1930s Hollywood, pre-talkies, you know, filmmaking talkies. Transition into talkies. Brad Pitt as a Doug Fairbanks type, you know, actor. Connor, I think we all share a love of Hollywood. By the guy who did La La Land and what's the other movie, the drumming movie? With Miles Teller.
Yeah, that's my favorite of his movies. I love that movie.
Yeah. So like going into it, like on paper, it's just like, oh, this has got a lot of stuff going for it. And I did enjoy it, but the issue was that it was 3 hours and 4 minutes. And within that 3 hours and 4 minutes, it was a really great 2, maybe 2.5 hour movie.
Yeah. I don't always judge by running time, but I do agree that.
No, I don't judge by running time either. Because there could be a 3 hour movie that I never look at my watch how long it is.
I'm agreeing with you in this instance, and also the next movie we're going to talk about, and also several movies we watched over the past year. It feels like, with all of the attention on TV, a lot of these film directors are like, well, fuck, I'm going to do my magnum opus. And it's just, this isn't a movie that didn't need to be 3 hours long. Now, I really liked it, but it also needed a half hour, 45 minutes cut out of it.
Exactly. And then my other complaint about it is Margot Robbie's in it, who I do enjoy, but I feel like...
I enjoy you, Miss Robbie.
I feel like once she started playing Harley Quinn, that's all. She's just another variation of, like, it just, like, it felt like she was just being Harley Quinn in the 1920s.
She didn't seem like that in Amsterdam, the 45 minutes I saw of it, though. That was a different.
Nor in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood either.
She was great in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Yeah. It's just like the character portrayal felt like the Margot Robbie being crazy kind of.
Well, you know, she was playing basically Clara Bow, and Clara Bow was basically like that.
Yeah.
I agree with you. The accent, because she's also from New Jersey, like it was very similar to Harley Quinn. I thought there was really incredible sequences in it.
Oh, yeah.
All the stuff where they shot movies was great. Like the first time you see the crazy outdoor shot with Brad Pitt's movie, his like big sword sandal movie. And then the first sequence where they shoot on sound with Margot Robbie's character was amazing. That whole sequence was one of the best sequences I watched all year. But there was all kinds of stuff. They could have cut all of Tobey Maguire's stuff. None of that needed to be in the movie.
Yep.
There was all kinds of stuff that it was just too much.
He won a card game that forced him to be in the movie, so he had to put him in there.
That whole sequence was just so weird. I mean, I don't know. But the thing was, what I'll give it credit for was that, like, if you love movies and you love Hollywood and you love movies, you've got to see this. Because I found myself getting emotional.
You have to love movies twice.
It was a great love letter to filmmaking. And it's funny because when they announced Babylon, they announced it around the same time as Ryan Murphy's Hollywood show. And they were both kind of the similar time periods, and I was really excited for both, and both were sort of not at all what I wanted them to be. I wanted someone to tell a straight retelling of that time period, because it's so interesting, and this is close, but it's also hyperactive.
Yep. Oh yeah. Well, after Connor saw it, you texted me and said, "This is what a movie on cocaine is like."
Yeah,
because there's a lot of cocaine in this film.
Incredibly hyperactive.
Yeah. I mean, like, it was my understanding, you know, that it was a piece of shit.
No, it's not a piece of shit at all.
No, it's not. It's not a piece of shit at all. It did poorly in the box office, but it's not a piece of shit. No.
Yeah. Hey.
Yeah.
I think it was probably too long and probably a little too daunting.
I saw headlines. That's all I saw.
Yeah.
I didn't
really. Well, yeah, because it performed poorly in the box office. Yeah. So, like,
I mean, also, and I don't love Damien Chazelle. I really like that first movie. I didn't really like La La Land that much.
You liked First Man, didn't you?
I don't think I ever saw it. Or if I did, I completely forgot about it.
Because I didn't like it at all, but I feel like you did. But it doesn't matter.
I don't think I saw it.
I thought Brad Pitt was great. The cast is really good in this movie. Everyone I thought was very good.
Here's an obvious statement: Brad Pitt is excellent.
Yeah. Yes. Oh yeah. No, I'm liking him more and more and more as time goes on. You know what I watched over the break was there it is, the break. We watched Burn After Reading, which I just hadn't seen in a while. Coen Brothers movies. Brad Pitt has a supporting role. By the way, that movie is a slick 130.
Yeah, see? Well,
I watched Raiders of the Lost Ark over the weekend because we were talking about it in the Hangout. Yeah. Not Raiders of the Lost Ark, Temple of Doom. It's less than 2 hours.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Anyway, Brad Pitt is a comedy role in that. It just looks like a completely different person. You know, then you go from Bullet Train to, I mean, and Cliff Booth, by the way, I said, possibly
so
the finest performance that he's ever done. Just think about it. I think about it all the time. Think about him sitting on that boat holding the harpoon, looking at his wife complain, and you're like, wow, that look could mean anything of a... Oh, so good. Anyways, but yes, Brad Pitt is delightful. If this anything was going to make me see that movie, it would be that.
Yeah. But the only difficulty, and I told this to Ron, because Ron asked me, do I need to see this in the theaters? And, you know, Josh, totally watch it. But you know, it's going to take you 4 days to watch.
I was going
to
say, like, if I was going to watch it, the theater was the place to do it.
And that's exactly what I told Ron. I was like, only way you're going to watch it in one sitting is if you go to the theater. Otherwise, you're going to never watch this in all the way through, and it's going to interrupt your viewing.
Yeah, I'm glad I saw it in the theater. That definitely was. And it's funny because I find myself, that, like, as I'm looking at the movies that are playing, I'm making that decision where it's like, do I want to experience this in the theater or do I not? Or you know, can I deal with it at home? And, like, so, you know, I know there are, you know, two movies we want to talk about in the show, like The Menu. I actively am like, I feel like I can watch that at home. I don't need to be in a theater to see that. Whereas The Fablemans, I was like, I kind of want to be in a theater just you know, given the content of it and another movie about movies. But I'm like, I want to see that one in the theater too.
I did because A, that's true. But then B, Connor doubled down on it. And I was like, okay, that means I have to go see that. So
yeah.
So let's jump into Fablemans then. I saw it before the break, but you guys watched it over the break.
What break are you talking about? I don't get a break, Connor, at all. Don't you know I have kids?
Did you have time off?
Another movie about movies.
Another movie about movies. I had to drag myself to the theater to see it. Like, that's the thing, is that, like, I'm like, I know I want to see it in the theater, but, like, as I'm going through the list and, like, it, and honestly, it came down to, like, runtime. Oh, because Avatar is also in the mix too. Like, between Avatar, Fablemans, and Babylon, I'm staring at these, like, 3-hour movies. I'm like, Jesus Christ. So I ended up going to the Fablemans because it was the shortest of them all. And we talked about it on the Hangout most recently, but, like, I have somewhat of a distaste for Steven Spielberg in general, not his films, just him in general. So that was one thing. And also knowing that this was, like, his semi-autobiographical movie, it's like, oh, come on. Like,
did he double cross you in a deal or something? Like,
yes. How much more, you know, how much more full of yourself do you need to be to do an autobiographical movie about yourself?
That's all he had left. He's made all the other movies.
But I will say that after the last scene, I sat back in my chair in the theater. I'm like, oh, fuck me. This is great. This was a great movie.
Yeah, I'd been excited for it. I know that a Spielberg movie, for the most part, is going to be really competently made, but I don't necessarily like all of them. And you're right, like, as a sort of semi-autobio, I don't know how realistic it was.
Semi-autobiographical, yeah.
You know, that could go either way, but tying what happened to just this love of cinema and what was a really simple movie, and it was full of, I thought, really nuanced performances. And say what you will about, like, Steven Spielberg being the uber bubblegum director of all time, I think that it was incredibly brave to do that story of that mother. And, you know, Michelle Williams is amazing and always is in whatever she is. But I thought that whole thing was really brave. I thought, you know, Paul Dano's performance was, I've never seen anything like that.
Very, very good.
Yeah.
Very un-Paul Dano.
You know, and Connor, again, has talked about this before, and I think it's true. Like, oh, I'm never going to see a, a mid-budget, like, people drama done on this scale. You know, it's going to be so rare going forward. Steven Spielberg can get it made, but I don't even know, Connor, like, is it doing well? Did it make its money back? No, exactly. No.
Yeah.
Disaster.
Disaster.
But it's not because it's bad. It's because
just business-wise, disaster.
Yeah,
No one's going to the movies. No one, this was a movie that's worth going to the movies. But then you got to find somebody who gives a shit about the cinema. It's not enough of us.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. In both The Fablemans and Babylon, there's almost the same exact crane shot over a adoring audience in a theater watching the movie.
Yeah.
And both times, it's a packed house. All the faces are lit up in awe. And both times I watched it in a theater, there was maybe 10 people in each one.
Exactly, yeah. Connor. I just thought the same thought. And then also before Babylon, we got the Margot Robbie and the other guy, the other lead on set, thanking us for coming to the movie, you know, what they've been doing. And Margot Robbie's like, we're so happy that Babylon is being seen the way it should in a packed theater of engaged audience. And I laughed out loud because I was like one of three people in the theater.
Her watching herself in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, there was like 10 people there. And I was like, that's more realistic.
Yep.
Well, it's middle of the day.
Right. I know.
Much like Babylon, I loved all the sequences in which he was making movies. Like, I just loved the ingenuity that required him to shoot a film with his buddies and a Super 8 camera, but you do it at a level that no other person of his age and
can or should. Yeah.
The special effects ingenuity and, you know, just the way I thought the love of movies really came through in that bit, which was wrapped around a really compelling, I thought, family drama and drama about being Jewish. And
it's been a while since we talked about it, but Michelle Williams is an American treasure. Like, she's fantastic. Like, she's so good.
American treasure.
Yeah, she could be. Yeah. And I got to admit, like, after even I had this comment in after West Side Story, like, Spielberg has done a great job of casting these kids who really impressed me in their performances.
Well, Julia Butters, again, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, played one of the sisters.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you know, the kid in this movie was really, really good.
Yeah, he was great.
And when they moved to California and all the bullying and the drama, like, those kids were good. Like, it was just like, it was all the crazy Jesus-loving girlfriend. Like, all of it was super engaging.
You're right. It's all those trappings of, I mean, again, this might be referring to a world that we grew up in more than other people who are younger than us, because we're not Spielberg's contemporary, but he was the one making the stuff for us when we were coming of age. And all of that stuff, we've talked about that, all of that stuff references the 50s and the 60s when those people grew up. And so that is not unfamiliar to us. So the school bullies in the letter jackets, you know, but done real was really interesting.
To build off what you just said, Connor, Tarantino referenced it in Cinema Speculation in his book a bunch of times about, like, when he's talking about the class of directors in the 40s and 50s and the early 60s, like, you know, the John Fords and like, you know, tying back to that, you know, and then you had the next class of directors, like the new American cinema, like the Scorsese and Spielberg and all, and Lucas and stuff like that, who were all children who grew up watching those directors and had a love of movies, right? And like that type of people, and we're in that. I would count us in that classification. But like with streaming and with everything that's going on, like that, I feel like those numbers are dwindling.
Well, you don't have monoculture. Monoculture,
but away. Also, so, but the people coming up now or in the past 10, they're growing up in a postmodern society.
Right,
everything is a comment on a comment and it's a remix. So. Yeah. I mean, these other people are talking about, they're seeing the formation of cinema as an art form coming into its maturity. Right. And what we're seeing now is comments on those things and that history. And it's not like, it's why it's hard for anything to feel really original anymore because it's not. And I don't think it's anybody's fault. It's not, but it's just a different time.
Yeah.
But also just there's no one movie everyone's seeing for the most, except for
Avatar.
But you know, like, what are budding filmmakers watching? You know, I don't know. You know, Spielberg and Coppola and Lucas, they all watched The Searchers in the theater.
Yeah.
You know, they all were influenced by the same movie, for better or worse.
They saw them, like, not with film school in mind. You know, they saw them as kids. They saw them as just the thing, and they fell in love with them. When we see that stuff, we're coming at it with a scholarly eye, you know, because you're like, well, we're supposed to watch this. That's why I saw Citizen Kane. Now, I loved it, but I also went in with a hindsight of knowing, like, this is really important. I have to figure out why. And it's just different.
Right. Yeah. I liked both movies a lot, and I liked the discussions that came out. I've had several discussions like this about both movies. Yeah. I think that's what also really valuable. One of the things you miss about when you're watching a movie by yourself on a couch in between the yelling is that you don't get to have this kind of talk afterwards with people, because everyone's watching everything at this different times, and
the TV doesn't talk back to you.
Doesn't talk back yet. Someday it will. Yeah.
I got to say, I feel really lucky about that, because my wife went to the same school that we did. And so I have a person to always have those conversations with, like, on that same level. And it's helpful.
But just think about it. Like, when you're not all going to the movie together, or not physically together, but maybe at the same time, you know, if I say to Josh, hey, did you watch the show? Oh, yeah, I watched it 6 months ago. Let's talk about it. Well, I don't really remember.
Right.
Yeah, I know. Josh didn't remember half the things we talked about tonight. I mean, because it's been 2 months, right? And so we had the distinct pleasure of being able to, Connor, you and I get to hang out in person in December, and we went to go see The Godfather in the theater.
Yes.
And see a, you know, 35mm print of it. And like, and then the next night at dinner, had great conversation about the movie and about like that was so what this is all about, right? Yeah. And that's why we do the show, and that's hopefully why everyone listens, you know, like it's the discussion and like the what worked and what didn't work and what you liked about it. And like, if anything, like it's that, and what I miss the most, cause Connor, I don't know if I mentioned I have kids.
Oh, you do.
But what's the challenging of, like, you know, there was a time where I went to the movies every Sunday. No matter what was playing, I went to go see the movies every Sunday, because like there was always something to digest, or there was always something to get into, and I missed that, you know what I mean? Because and like seeing these strings of movies made me want to do that again. But like the combination of my own personal schedule, but also there's not enough out
that,
now.
See, like, that too, like Connor, you'd said it. You went every Sunday. Like for the first big chunk of my adult life, every weekend almost, I went to at least one movie.
Yeah,
go to the movies. Now watch.
That's what
movie.
We did.
Yeah. Go, because that was to us what it was. But and you're right, there were a lot of movies. And now I'll be like, all right, have some time. I don't see anything I want to see. And that's not in February. That's in the fall.
right?
Yeah. Just because, you know, like in February it's shit, but I don't think it's true anymore.
Well, that's the whole middle has gone up. But that actually was mentioned in that Hollywood, the oral history book, which we all got each other for Christmas in some form or another. At one point, this is not even a new thought, because the interview was probably in the 70s, or not the 70s, it was in the 80s. He said basically, you know, it's getting to the point where people go to a specific movie. It used to be just, let's go to the movies, we'll go there and see what's playing.
What's playing,
and we'll pick one. And now it's like, I only go to the theater for a specific reason, not like, Saturday night, let's go to the movies. Okay, what's playing? Well, we'll see when we get there, and we'll pick whatever's at 8 o'clock.
But you have to buy them ahead of time. But it's not even, we just have too much choice. I mean, that's the difference. Yeah. Like, there was no choice. You just found something.
Anyway.
And they all started at 7. Let's go, because one of them, they start at 7. And now it's the fucking terrible, well, it starts at 6 or 8:45.
Oh,
motherfucker.
God, that's the problem. That's probably the three-hour movies, too, is that, like, it's either 6:05 or 10:30. And I'm like, I can't do either of those. Like,
oh, you have kids.
And a job.
That's what I ran into with Avatar, which is like, okay, well, I want to see Avatar because I want to experience it in the theater and the technology and all stuff like that. But Jesus Christ, 3.5 hours long, finding the exact time that was like after the kids' bedtime that I wouldn't be a zombie the next day, like all that sort of stuff.
I had the same problem. I don't even have those restrictions. It was like Mike Romo and I, a friend of the show, were trying to figure out a time to go. And he's like, can you go to the 4 o'clock or the 10 o'clock? And I was like, I don't want to do either one of those. Like, what else can we find here?
I mean, we know why they did that. It's so they could fit in an extra showing, because people weren't going. And also the movies were shorter, so you could do 7 and 9 and it would be fine.
Yeah.
But I wonder if they've shot themselves in the foot in that way. And now people don't like either of the available times, so they can play it 2 times, but not as many people are going to either.
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely what's happening. I think with this string of 3 hour movies, it's bad. It's bad.
Certainly not in the case of Avatar, which is just at the $2 billion mark at theaters, but I have this discussion a lot, apparently, because anytime Avatar comes up, people have such a bizarre, bizarre aggravated reaction around Avatar. Like, I'm not a big, Avatar fan. Like, I don't fucking dress up like a Navi to go to Comic-Con. Like, I think they're fun movies, and I don't understand why people take them personally.
It really rubs people the wrong way. Like, a lot of my staff, like, a lot of my coworkers at work, like, there's a couple of people who are just like, it's straight up hatred.
I don't get it. Like, it's just a movie. Like, what do you
mean? Because it's bad, or because it does something?
It doesn't make sense. I can't answer it. I don't know the answer. I'm like, I saw the first one time in the theater, and I saw it once a month ago in prepping for the new one. Like, I've seen them 2 times.
There's some uncanny valley reaction to the fucking blue cat people, right? And like, much like Margot Robbie's character in Babylon, nobody's stepping up and calling it like they see it and being truthful and that sort of thing. I think it's rubbing people the wrong way. These unnatural, not realistic things on the screen moving like regular people, like they exist when they don't.
Is it not Robbie?
It's Robbie. It's totally Robbie, but I just let him go.
Okay, so, you know, it was fun.
It's not Robbie?
I think it's Robbie.
No, Robbie made toy robots in the 80s.
How do you pronounce Margot Robbie? I thought it was Robbie.
It's okay. She's only been famous for the last 20 years.
Oh, there are 2 B's. I thought there was 1 E. I'm sorry.
Similar to Babylon, fun movie that could have had a half hour cut out of it. The middle sagged. I thought the first act was terrific. I thought the finale was terrific, but the middle sagged under the weight of too much story, too many characters.
What was I saying? Is it Robbie or I was saying Robbie.
You were saying Robbie. It's Robbie.
It's Robbie. Yeah, okay. Sorry about that. I apologize.
Don't bet against James Cameron is a lesson we've all had to learn over and over again, because
he's
a very good director, and he's a very good action director.
My review of Avatar, The Way of Water, is visually stunning.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
Like, have to see it in a theater. Oh, my God. Like you are there. It is immersive. It is, like, it like no other experience at all, right? Way too fucking long. Again.
What's funny is that he said that, and you had a build-up, and the point was way too fucking long. And I think he did it better. I want that known.
The story was better than the first one. The first one, the story was just like a mess. This one at least had a cohesive kind of story, but 30% of it I just didn't care about. Like, I was like, just get to it. And then what happens is that James Cameron falls, much like Spielberg. No, I don't know about Spielberg. That's being unreasonably mean.
Oh.
But falls into this trap of self-referential remixing where, like, do we really need another action sequence with a big boat sinking?
I had that thought. I was like, okay.
And, like, I'm sure he's like, oh, this is great. This is just like when I did Titanic. Like, no, it's not fucking great. Do something else.
I loved the opening. The thing I really want from, and I don't know how much Avatar we're going to end up getting. I think we're definitely going to get a third one. They've already shot all the live action bits for it. And he's shot part of 4 already, apparently, too. I want them to go back to Earth now. Like, that opening shot where the ships arrive.
Yeah.
it was such a fucking cool design and looked awesome. I was like, take me there. Take me wherever those things came from. That's going to be cool. So I think we've sort of had our fill of this planet.
I'm with you, but we're going to, I mean, and the thing is that, like, I thought it was interesting that, like, the fucking blue cat people, and here's this, the different blue water cat people.
Yeah.
Right. Like, and if there's going to be,
queen was Caitlin Winslet.
Yeah. If there's going to be another type of people who are fucking fire people, like they say, or whatever, like, cool. Like this planet is interesting enough, and I'm curious to see what it all looks like and all that sort of stuff. But, like, I don't know.
The tension between the tribes was really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, like Babylon, there were elements in here that were interesting that I think a much tighter movie exists within.
It's just a fun, crazy sci-fi lark. Like, I don't look at it any more than that. I don't know why anyone looks at it any more than that. It's not the greatest thing ever made, but it's an incredibly fun time at the movies.
Yeah.
Do I want to do other movies than these? Yes. Is he going to do these for the rest of his career? Probably yes also.
I think the thing is that, Connor, you're going to get mad at me, but I think he does really, really good, amazing, mediocre movies. If that makes sense.
Mediocre. Yeah. Interesting. So what would you call Avatar, mediocre?
Just like
outside of Avatar. Take away Avatar.
Oh.
He's only made like five movies.
I was just thinking of Avatar. And this whole time I've been like, I got to go watch Aliens. But, I mean,
Terminator
2.
True Lies.
I think, I feel like they're movies that sort of stand out as a part, but it's hard for me to find things in them that are really resonant other than like the technical things of like a special effect or whatever. You know, Robert Patrick using his metal liquid hands to come over the, you know, but not necessarily.
Interestingly enough, in the montage at the end of Babylon was Robert Patrick as the T-1000
and
like a great
well.
Moment in cinema. Yeah.
I don't know. Like they're great movies, but they don't make me feel a lot.
Well, yeah. They're action movies.
Yeah, you know. But I know. Maybe that's just it. Like, as it's an action movie, you know, but then it gets to be the biggest movie of all time. And you're like, well, does that deserve it? And it does. It just depends on what you want out of a movie.
Yeah, I guess it's the balance between the visual effects and the action and the story. For me, like, you know, like my problem with the first one was the story. The story in this one was better. But even then, there were like major plot points that were telegraphed hours before they happened. Where like Connor, like within the first 45 minutes, I was like, oh, is going to die.
Well, hopefully right? You've forgotten by then because it's been 2 hours. Right.
Exactly. Well, that was my other problem is that I'm watching this movie and I realized for the first hour of the movie, I'm expected to remember numerous people from a movie 13 years ago that I have not watched since then.
That's why I rewatched it beforehand.
He's not going to do it for you, Ron. He's going to do it.
My other thought was, at what point is a movie, an animated movie.
Yeah.
Because
good question.
I don't think to him it matters.
No, I'm not saying, I'm just saying in terms of like.
And I don't mean that flippantly. I think.
No. To me, it doesn't matter, but I'm looking at more like award season. Like, shouldn't, by all rights, Avatar be in the animated movie category as opposed to the film? It's like 95%, nothing is live action on it, you know?
Well, has Andy Serkis ever won an actor award? Because.
By the way, Andy Serkis, bring it back. Very good in Andor.
Yeah, I have no doubt. He's always good in everything.
Yeah.
We went long. Do we want to talk about the last one or just go?
What's
go
the on? Last one?
The menu.
Oh, the menu? Oh,
the
I can
burger. Let's move.
I can send the menu up and just like, there's nothing worse than watching a movie and realizing and sinking in your seat. They're like, oh, God. Oh, God.
Me on the screen.
Yeah.
I relate to the most unlikable character in the room in this yeah. movie way too yeah, much.
Not only that, but it's not just being a snob about the food, but being an insufferable know-it-all.
Yes, exactly.
So I watched the menu, and not in the theater. I saw it on HBO when it hit the hit. But I thought it was really fun. That kind of movie,
fun.
Again, doesn't really get made now anymore. And I'm glad this one did. And I'm glad it did fairly well. It's not a horror, but it's not. But it's a.
You know what I said?
Oh, wait, quick note before Josh, you say 1 hour, 47 minutes.
There you go.
There you go.
There you go. You know what this was? What? This was a really competently made M. Night Shyamalan movie. Like M. Night Shyamalan movies make me, I can't stand them. It makes me roll my eyes. I'll be into it and then he'll do something stupid I hate. I was like, oh, this is what he's supposed to be doing if he did it really well. That's kind of what I thought. Like a great casting. You know, like it wasn't, I didn't love
what did
everything
he do?
About it, but I was into it the whole time. The director's not a person.
Yeah.
He's like a TV director.
He did Succession, Game yes. of Thrones, Shameless. Yeah, he's a TV director. Yeah.
It was like a locked room mystery, right? Like it was yeah. like one, basically yes. one set, smartly written to keep the budget down. and yep. full of great actors. It's almost like a play. And it got progressively more disturbing, but stayed funny the whole time.
Like, you've got a locked room thing, but this is like wacky. Like, it's not. Yeah,
but funny. Yeah. But funny. The tone was interesting.
It starts in a believable premise and setup. And then it reaches a point where you realize, like, oh God, no, this is making a left turn. And then they just take the steering wheel and turn it all the way to the left for the rest of the drive. Right. And before the movie ends, you got a cheeseburger that will make you salivate. I will give credit that one of the people who worked on the film was one of the guys who did all the David Chang Netflix documentary stuff. So all the food cinematography that guy directed the second unit that did it. This guy, David Gelb. And it, like, you could tell, like, the shots of the food, like, look like really like.
Ron, the fact that you know the guy who directed the second unit food shots makes you that guy even more.
Well, the thing was, is that I love the lens that he used on the ceviche.
But this is, I mean, if you haven't seen it, it's a movie about a bunch of wealthy people who go to this exclusive restaurant, $1,200 tasting menu. They have to take a boat out there and things go south on them very quickly. I thought it was really fun. It was a really enjoyable, as you said, quick in and out, complete package. That's what I love about a film, right? Like, I love TV. I love immersing in character and story, and I love all that stuff. But I really love a complete story in one go, beginning, middle, and an end. That's still the value of the film to me.
Might I add again, 1 hour, 47 minutes. So
the cheeseburger is basically the star of the movie. It's like everywhere now. It's like everywhere you turn. You want to make the cheeseburger for the menu? Here's the rest. There's a restaurant in LA that makes it now.
Let's talk about the fries, though.
They look good.
Yeah.
And he was so happy when he presented it to her. And he was so happy when she liked it.
Yeah. The psychology of that whole thing with him, because the movie was ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know, like, in the best way. And so he went and he played, like, really all he wanted was to make somebody happy with food and have a feeling about it himself.
I really like that because that, and I'm trying not to spoil it, but in that sequence where he's making the burger, like, the only time you see him truly happy
in
the movie.
Yeah.
And it changes that character.
Yeah.
Yep.
Ray Fiennes, he does a lot.
So good.
He does a lot. He is really great, but you can't, like, it's not like Jeremy Irons, who plays like a type of character. He's, you know, the high class, whatever. Ray Fiennes all over the place.
Yeah.
In a great way. I love it.
I do feel like the mix of customers in the mm-hmm. room at the restaurant, like the John Leguizamo washed up, you know, kind of actor, you know, the investment bros, the restaurant critic, like there were so many types that were like, and they mixed well.
Just on the
edge
of caricature. Like,
it was fun. It was great. I'm glad I watched it. But again, I'm like, watched it in my living room on HBO Max as well. You know, like, had to make that decision. I'm like, I'm not going to get in the theater, and I don't feel like I missed anything by not seeing it in the theater.
Agree.
All right, so there you go. Wow. Those are some of the things. I had more movies, but we gotta wrap this up. That was fun. I enjoy talking about these things with you guys, and I missed it.
I know. Yeah. I wish we had some burgers and we were hanging out in person.
I do have to say that you mentioned it. I apologize to Josh because he wasn't there. We wish you had been there. But when we did have that post Godfather dinner, you and me and a bunch of our friends talking about it, it was incredibly fun.
Yeah,
that's what this is all about. This is why we do it.
Yep.
You know, people are very smart about these kinds of things and will say interesting things. And
it was good. It was a good conversation.
Big deal.
Yeah.
So there you go. This has been our Media Explode show. It's our monthly show, again, unlocked by the patrons at patreon.com/iFanboy. They unlock this show. They unlock our various special shows like the Talk Explode show, the Book Explode show. Basically, if it's got Explode on the end, they've unlocked it. And of course, Josh and I have our weekly Pick of the Week show where we talk about the week's new comic books. Ron talks about Android and all related phones and tablets on All About Android every week.
Sure do.
Josh wants to join. Can he join?
Sure. We're welcoming.
I don't know anything.
Yeah, you can learn.
Is that like FaceTime?
It's kind of like iFanboy. So.
on a recent Pick of the Week show, Josh admitted that when he looks at Android technology, he's confused. And so I thought, perfect.
Totally.
You're perfect for the show.
It's completely like, I can be like the monkey. I'm like, give the monkey the phone. See if he can do it.
How do you get to the I don't know how to change.
Well, I mean, you'd be surprised that a lot of iOS, it's very similar to Android because iOS has lifted about 60% of Android over the years.
I'm sure it's gotten a little better. And also, many of you Android people have iPads because that's just a thing.
But although Google's coming out with a new tablet next year, the new Pixel tablet. So,
I don't care.
So we'll be back next month. And till then, I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
I'm Josh. I mean, I care about you.
I know.
I was like, oh, he's going to say it, and I can't wait to do this.
When I finally get myself together, I'm going to get down in that sunny southern weather.